Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. I am sitting across the table from my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you, Daniel?
I'm doing well. Just got done with some traveling, and we did our thing that we've done before, where we watched them separately.
Yes.
We watched. We did this with Buster Scruggs while I was jet-setting about,
as I want to do. Our opinion on the show is wholly uninfluenced by each other.
Yes, it is. We have not discussed.
Pure, unadulterated Dan opinion and Bianca opinion. Separate.
It's true. We've got what?
Like oil and water.
That's what they say. How does that... I've heard that phrase and I know what it's saying, but I've never actually thought about the actual mechanics of that. So what happens if you take a cup of oil and you pour it into a cup of water?
It won't mix at all.
So is it like a black and tan where it's like, it just like the oil sits on top of the water?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds cool. We should try it.
Well, have you ever seen a bottle of dressing? The oil always comes to the top and then you got to shake it.
I was never really a big dressing guy.
Really? I feel like you're the kind of person that would eat a salad just as a vehicle for ranch dressing.
I mean, again, I never had, not to retread old territory, but yeah, I had my first salad when I was like 28, and I pretty much like all my salads have been, for the most part, store-bought, or there was a period where you were making me salads a lot when we lived in San Francisco, but I was not inspecting the dressing containers, so I really haven't been face-to-face with a lot of bottles of dressing in my life.
All right, well, you're missing out. They're quite exciting.
Okay, yeah. Sounds great. So we'll be covering dressing this episode of Pain in the Stream. Now we got, what do we got here? 7 episodes of Terrace House?
24? Yeah.
Okay, we are covering episodes 24 through 30.
Is that 6? No.
1, 2. It's always confusing because it looks like 6, but then you got to count both ends.
Yeah.
So we did 7 episodes of Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City, Part 2, episodes 24 to 30.
Makes you laugh every time, doesn't it? Doesn't get old.
I don't think it's funny. I think it's needlessly complex. I think we could all have this be one big part.
Mm.
But anywho, here we are. We got some people coming in. We got some people leaving. And we will get down to it. Let's start with episode 24 here.
Yeah.
We're starting to see some girl talk between Nachan and Minori. And they are getting along at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember what started the whole discord between... Discord's a bad word, right? It means you're not getting along. There's discord between these two? Yeah, that's right. Why is that the name of an app then? Why is that the name of a gaming app?
Discord?
Yeah, if it's a negative connotation.
This made me realize something. I feel like this show has a lot of girl talk in it. And it is such stereotypical girl talk because all they do is talk about boys.
It's exactly what I think most guys think girls talk about when they're all sitting in a room
and
together.
And it's so unfortunate because I never talk about boys with other girls.
In your teenage years, did you ever sit around on a floor and talk about if you thought somebody's face was cute?
No. I just like to ask questions about the other person until we get like progressively more like personal and they get uncomfortable and then the conversation ends.
That is different than this show.
Yeah, no, I don't talk about... boys.
What was the start of the Nachan and Minori stuff? I remember, there was the thing at the table. Oh, yeah, there was a really terse conversation in the last set of episodes.
I mean, it kind of started the first day that Nachan came when she was joking about how Minori and Uchi would make fun of each other and be kind of rude to each other or whatever. And to her, it didn't seem like a lovey-dovey relationship, but she kind of said it in a silly way, lighthearted. It didn't seem like she was actually judging them, but Minori took it as such. And that began their kind of disagreement. And then they that incident in the kitchen was like the worst of it. Yeah.
And so that's why it was kind of interesting here at the beginning of this set to see them getting along really well, which later on we will see more of Nachan's kind of bluntness in speaking kind of turn into another issue, but that's later on. But for right now, Minori, like, she's kind of one foot out the door at this point, so it's kind of nice to see, you know, things getting fences getting mended.
Yeah, I mean, might as well leave on a good note, especially if she doesn't have to deal with Nachan anymore. If she didn't even like her in the first place, it's not like she has to deal with
it. It's like, whatever, I dealt with her for a couple weeks before I moved out, I'll deal with it. So they have a big like snowboarding thing where the group all goes snowboarding together before Minori and Uchi leave, which again, this is kind of an end of an era here for Boys and Girls in the City because they were the last two of the original 6 on the way out.
Yeah, they were there for a while.
And there were some interesting stories going on there. I know last Panning the Stream episode about this, we talked a bit about our issues with Minori, which, you know, they stayed around, but I still enjoyed her and Uchi as inhabitants. I don't want to say characters because these are just human beings, but inhabitants of the terrace house.
Yeah, I feel like Minori, though, was kind of boring, and I don't know. She was obviously a part of a major storyline in that first part between her and Uchi, but just as a person, she just doesn't seem like my kind of gal.
Yeah, and some of that stuff about ambition and everything from the last one was kind of disappointing.
Oh, so her and Uchi leave at the end of this episode, and can I spoil it for you whether or not they continued in their relationship?
Oh, yes, because I have not heard this. Okay, let me guess. I am guessing they lasted less than a month as a couple.
I couldn't figure out how long exactly they lasted for, if they just broke off immediately or whatever, but Minori is married to someone else now.
Oh, wow. Is it just somebody just totally not at
all? Totally different, yeah.
But not associated with the show at all, obviously.
As far as I know.
Interesting. Okay, so this was like 2016 or whatever. So, man, they must have met and got married pretty quick afterwards. Interesting. So we meet a new girl here. We meet Misaki Tamori. Sometimes she's called Tamo-san. Most of the time she's called Misaki. So that's what we're going to refer to her as. And she wants to build an amusement park. And she has been called...
with her bare hands.
Yeah, yes. The roller coasters and all the science. 90-pound
little woman bear building a giant amusement park.
Yeah, she's interesting. We're definitely going to get into some stuff with her in these episodes. But my first impression, and I can't say I really got shook from this first impression throughout, but she seems kind of flighty.
She, absolutely agree with that. She does seem very flighty and, you know, not. I think Hikaru said she is not the brightest. But she visually has like a Cindy Crawford quality to her. Or you know what? She evokes Cindy Crawford's daughter, Kai Gerber. They look very, she looks like a Japanese version of Kai Gerber. Okay. Yeah.
That's extremely specific.
Yes. Very beautiful girl, needless to say. And, but very... kind of shallow, maybe.
Yeah,
in her personality.
There's a point later on where she's having a discussion with a 18-year-old, and one of the panelists says something like, "Oh yeah, I feel like Misaki and this 18-year-old are kind of on the same level mentally in terms of like attitude and everything." Totally. And like, yeah, I do kind of feel that for sure.
This show makes me realize that like between the ages of 16. And like 21, that all those people can be pooled together as far as experience level, intellect level. Like, you know, I'm generally speaking, I'm sure there are some really hardened 16-year-olds out there.
Yes, there are. Yeah, it's really interesting because there are times where it's just like they will be asking like an 18-year-old, like, "What are you like when you're in love?" And it's like, "What are you fucking about?" Like, what are you talking about? Like, 18, you don't know anything. Also like between like 18 and 30, I think there's also like three or four just giant shifts in knowledge and experience.
Oh,
and
the difference between an 18-year-old and a 30-year-old is so vast.
Yes.
Even though it's just 12 years. Versus like the difference between a 30-year-old and a 42-year-old is not that different at all.
Yeah.
But that between those years, those are like formative years when change and...
That whole like decade or so. I feel like me at like 18, 21, 25, and 30 are just completely different human beings.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people, I think most people... struggle in their 20s to figure out what they're going to do, you know, relationship-wise, professionally.
And who they are. Money-wise.
In regards to everything.
Yeah, you know, what matters to them.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of all the stuff you go through, you do learn a lot and change so much because, you know, needless to say, it's when you go through adversity that you change and, you know, grow as a person. And I think that is those are really critical years. So it's weird to group all these people who are on paper similarly aged, but you know, in practice so vastly different in different stages of their lives, to put them all in a house together.
Yeah.
So I feel like if I was a 27, I am 27 now, and if I was in a house with a 20-year-old, obviously I would feel, you know, like the big sister or whatever, the mom of the group, but I just feel like I couldn't have a viable conversation about serious topics with them, because it's like my whole thing would be like I would just write off anything they say as like, well, you don't really know yet.
Right.
Because you're only 20.
Well, that's what's interesting, where it's like Nichan, you know, she was looking to meet someone in this house, and when Hikaru came in the last set of episodes, it's kind of like, he's cute, but like he's super young.
Right. He's 18, right?
Was that it? I think that was the case. Yeah. So, and I want to say Nichan and maybe Hikaru, or no, I'm sorry, Misaki. Are they like 26, 27 around there?
I think Misaki is like in her maybe 24 or something, and Nichan is around there too.
Gotcha.
But yeah, Hikaru I think is like 18 or 20. It doesn't matter. But he's very young.
Yeah. But speaking of another 27-year-old, in the next episode here, we meet the new fella that is going to be replacing Uchi. Mm-hmm. And that is Honda, who is typically referred to as Hansan in this show. So mm-hmm. we'll call him Hansan here. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting one here. He's interesting and different in a lot of ways. Like, right. I feel like so many people that come into Tara's house are, you know, these models, you know, that come on and they're kind of like into the idea of like being on the show and they love the show. Mm-hmm. He seems like an adult in a way that a lot of the people in the show don't. Like, he is an architect. He wants to go to Harvard.
Right.
He's 27. And a big, big thing here is that he has a girlfriend, mm-hmm. which is a big change from, like, I don't know if anyone else on the show. Oh, was it Yuriko? Was she one of the original ones? The girl that Tap liked? And she was, like, kind of in between. She'd kind of ended something with
the
guy.
It was her ex. But, yeah. Like, I guess they would occasionally talk. I think from what I remember, like, he saw her on Tara's house and then just started texting her again.
That's right. Yeah. But as far as, like, coming in with an active partner, I think Hansan's the first one. And it's just funny because everyone from, like, everyone in the house to all the panelists is like, well, he's perfect. He's just the perfect person. Like, and he does seem awesome.
Yeah, he does.
Seems
incredibly really smart, funny.
Smart, mature, helpful. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem selfish in any way whatsoever.
No, doesn't seem to be, like, leading the girls on at all. No. Even though they're, like, fawning over him.
Yeah, which a really interesting thing here that we have not quite seen how it plays out yet is Nichan likes him a lot. And she just kind of straight up says, like, I don't care that he has a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, she's going to go for it anyway, which... That's an interesting thing. We've not quite seen that kind of dynamic on the show yet. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that in a bit here. But yeah, he comes in and just everyone's like, yeah, he's the best. Meanwhile, Hikaru, the younger guy, he's starting to show – there's a certain like kind of – I don't know, brattiness is...
You could tell, I kind of figured from the jump that this was just like a spoiled rich kid, based on the fact that he's, you know, 18 and has a motorcycle and like, you know, he just strikes me as such. And then anytime someone like playfully jests with him, like talking about his driving or whatever, he just totally overreacts.
See, I thought he might be more grounded because he's got this blue collar construction job and everything. And
right,
so I
right.
thought he was going to be a little more like down earth, but he does have an attitude.
For sure.
And like in this episode is the one where they bring up the driving stuff and like... I think they're just joking with him saying he'd be a bad driver mm-hmm. or something. And he gets just super like pissy about mm-hmm. it. It's like, all right, man, come on. Just right. We're just kind of fucking with you here. Mm-hmm. So starts showing some attitude here and everyone is like, oh, you're mad all the time. And then he's getting mad about that. We're like, everyone thinks I'm mad all the time. I'm not mad. It's like, but he's getting mad about it. People thinking he's mad.
I know. I can kind of relate in a way. Like my mom does this thing where she's constantly like apologizing. And it gets to the point where it's like, Mom, stop. Like, I get angry that she's apologizing.
She's listening right now. You can work it out.
She has nothing to apologize for. And it's like, when she says that, it makes it seem like I was suggesting that she did something wrong, even though if she did do something wrong, you know, I make no bones about saying it.
Right.
But it's like, just relax, woman.
It can be annoying when somebody thinks that, like, my dad actually does mm-hmm, this a lot, mm-hmm. where it's like, I'll just be, like, quiet for a second or whatever. And he's like, you okay? You mad at me? What's going on? You mad? I'm like, no, Dad, I'm fine. But he'll ask so many times. It's like, okay, I'm actually getting annoyed now because
I wasn't
upset.
I mean,
but
similarly, as soon as I wake up, like, I will be downstairs, like, 2 minutes after I get out of bed when I'm staying with my parents occasionally. And my mom will be like, are you okay? And, like, my eyes will barely be open. And I'm like, what?
I feel like I've done that with you sometimes where it's like, we'll wake up. And I'm like, hey, are you upset with me? And you'll be like, I just woke up. Just shut up.
Well, I am admittedly a total bitch in the morning.
I think you're lovely in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's because I don't let you leave the bedroom until I've done my morning ritual, right. Which just involves eating breakfast and watching TV by myself.
I know better than to walk out there while you're doing your morning stuff. So, yeah, we have kind of a date here. So Hikaru, early on, I've got here, it says Hikaru and Tomori have motorcycle date. That's not right. Hikaru and Misaki. It's Misaki.
Well, her last, I don't
know. Oh, that's why. Okay.
I can't forget if it's the first name or last name. One of her names is
right.
Tomori.
Misaki, yeah, this is early in the notes, and I was still calling her Tomori. So Hikaru and Misaki have this motorcycle date. Misaki makes it pretty clear right away that she likes Hikaru, but she's pretty surface level about it at mm-hmm. the beginning, saying, like, I like his face. Mm-hmm. So that's where that's coming from, at least at the beginning here.
Right.
But we'll move into episode 26 here, where we don't really know what's going on with Hikaru and Misaki at this point after the date, but they have a dinner, and once again, Hikaru starts getting weird because Misaki brings up her ex or something. And it's nothing like... I don't remember being anything particularly salacious or, like, she didn't seem wistful
No.
I think she just, like, was answering a question or two about him.
Yeah, and it was really odd, too, because... He, at this point, isn't really sure if he has feelings for her or not. I feel like even if you're someone who is, let's say he was absolutely in love with Misaki, like instantly, mm-hmm. and she brought up her ex-boyfriend, like he's an unreasonable person, and it would take an unreasonable person to get touchy about it, but I could see why. But at this point, he's not even sure of his feelings, so who cares if she brings up her ex-boyfriend, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and it's not like some weird thing where it's like, you know, on their first date, she can't stop talking about her ex. It wasn't like that. It was in a group company, and they were asking questions and stuff. Like, it seemed like a weird thing to get upset about.
Totally.
But at this point, like, the girls in general are really getting along mm-hmm. here. Like, that's all good. They're having a lot of girl talk, and Misaki's like, okay, I like Hikaru's face, but mm-hmm. she likes Hansan's personality, which...
Arisa's kind of out of the picture, like, just because she's so busy working on her hat stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because as she's leaving here, like, she did not have that much of an impact, I would say. Like, I'd say maybe less than anyone we've seen so far in Terra's house.
Honestly, like, the fact that she was... kind of always out of the house.
Yeah.
It made me wonder why she decided to do it in the first place. And it made me think, like, maybe it was just to get her brand out there, to her hat brand out there, you know?
I mean, thought of that.
But I'm sure it would be beneficial. Like, look at what happened to... Oh, wait, you don't watch Opening New Doors. But I was going to say, in Opening New Doors, there's this one guy who has a band. And, like, ever since he appeared on the show, it's been, like, really successful on Spotify. And they play all these festivals and stuff like that. So I imagine there would be, like, a... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I imagine there would be, like, some kind of benefit to, you know, having her hat stuff out there.
Oh, huge benefit. Right? Yeah. And, like, I had not even considered that, but, like, that is an incredibly savvy move she thought that, like, okay, I could see myself getting on this show, and also it's going to coincide with me getting ready to launch this thing, and if, like, the episodes are coming out as she's launching the brand while she's, like, at her peak of, like, you know, media spotlight.
Right.
That's actually incredibly savvy, and I can't be upset about that whatsoever. Yeah, that's actually super smart if she did that. But yeah, we see a little bit of Hansan helping her out with this display. Like, he's incredibly capable at, like, building this stuff.
And totally willing to help.
Yeah, just, and he's a busy-ass dude, too, mm-hmm. and, like, he's super willing to do that. Like, I kind of get why everyone's like, okay, this guy's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's rare that people have, like, are so artistically minded, but also have, like, a technical and, you know, proficiency in actually building stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Usually it's, like, one person comes up with the ideas and the other person executes, but
right.
he's a... the whole package.
He seems great. man, I can't stop thinking about that hat thing. That is this fucking smooth move, if that's right? what she did.
I don't, who knows, but...
But again, outside of that, even if that is the case, like, she just was kind of not standoffish. She was just busy. So, like, that's why it's like, you know, the one kind of storyline we really got with her was her and Armand, mm-hmm. and that didn't really go anywhere. Like, she kind of came in, all the guys liked her. Her and Armand became, like, the thing. Like, oh, is this going to happen? And mm-hmm. then it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, all right, I got to go do this hat shit. And then she left. Mm-hmm. So not a whole lot. Like, I liked her. She seemed nice. But, yeah, anyway. So going into episode 27, Hikaru and Misaki have a date. They're, you know, they're riding motorcycles around. They go to the ocean. Misaki makes hamburgers for Hikaru, and he likes them, which makes her so happy she cries.
That's exactly what happens whenever I make you a meal that you like. I just start openly weeping about it.
Yeah, whenever you make that really crispy asparagus, and then I bite into it, I'm like, this is pretty good. And you just start weeping for uncontrollably. Yes.
It's really good asparagus, guys.
I love it. I love asparagus. And gals. It's great. And so that's kind of like episode 27 is kind of focused on that date, and it seems like things are going all right here. It seems like they're enjoying each other. You maybe get the sense that Misaki is a bit more invested in all of this than Hikaru.
I think by virtue of everyone living together and constantly being around each other and always having this looming presence, like if you have a crush on a person and you're in that situation, it's going to be amplified, like, by several magnitudes, just because you're always around them. And, like, it's not like a thing where it's like, well, I might see her or I might see him at this bar when we go out for drinks on Saturday. It's not just that. It's like, well, I might see him when I go downstairs to get a cup of coffee. You know what I mean? It's like a constant thing.
Yeah, and, like, they've seen the show, so they know that, like, relationships and stuff are, like, kind of the focal point, and will they or won't they, you know, become a thing. So, totally. Like, there's, like, probably that pressure. Like, I'm on Terrace House. I gotta find out who I like.
Yeah, I feel like when we first started watching Terrace House, I'm really just speaking for myself. Maybe you agree. I thought of it as, like, a window into Japanese culture and, like, young people and what they're interested in and stuff like that. But as I've watched so much of it at this point, it really feels like it really is all about the romance yeah. stuff. Like anytime, and it makes sense. That's the most appealing thing. I mean, unless someone got murdered or something.
That's a bit appealing.
I mean, entertaining, I guess. On the chart of entertaining things, I mean, honestly, death.
Entertaining murder. Just seems like too positive of a word.
Number two is love. Number two is probably sex, and then number three is like love, romance kind of stuff.
Okay, so you know what murder, I mean? Sex, and then romance.
Well, those are the most entertaining. Think about any movie we've ever seen, Daniel.
I understand. It's fascinating.
And then like number four on that list would be superpowers.
Oh, okay. I think maybe the word is like morbidly fascinating, or like, you know, like true crime
murder
stuff.
Murder or death. Murder or death.
All right. So we go into episode 28 here, and... whereas in 27, it's kind of like, okay, it seems like they're both liking it. It kind of gets extinguished pretty early because Hikaru, ever the smooth, cool dude, says that, like, oh, yeah, I had fun on the date because I like motorcycles.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like, oh, man, okay. Like, so instantly it's like, oh, shit, okay, is he backing off this thing already?
You know what I suspect, Dan? Huh? So they went on this date and things seemed to be going well between them. And then he kind of falls off and things get a little lukewarm. I almost wonder if... he's been on the show for a while now to the point where his episodes would be airing in Japan.
Right.
And I imagine he would be very – I don't find him attractive, but that doesn't mean that he's not – like I can't deny that he's objectively attractive, even though he's not my type at all. You're my type. I would imagine that he's getting a lot of love on social media. And there's probably like a lot of like unbelievably beautiful women that are like hitting him up on Instagram or whatever, being like, hey, if you ever, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure he's getting inundated with attention from women. And maybe that's why like Mizaki doesn't seem as appealing to him, because it's not like she's his only option right now. Does that make sense?
That he's maybe seeing all this like grass is greener type thing where it's totally. Like, oh, these other girls, look
exactly.
how hot she
and
is.
It's like, not like they're barred from social media. Like,
no. They get to watch the show. They get to be
exactly.
on the internet. Yeah.
So I would expect he would be getting some of that, and I wonder if that had any influence on his feelings.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. You've got some you are good at reading into potential like analyzing stuff. Like, I had never thought of the hat thing. I had never thought of this thing. You're good at well, maybe I'm just bad and I can only just see what's in front of my face all the time and I can't think deeper about it.
You tend to take things at face value.
Yeah. And so whenever I'm presented with something that's like, oh, somebody thought more about it, it's like, oh man, you can do that? There could be more than just the thing on the screen you're staring at.
You and Austin Walker are like on the total opposite ends of the spectrum of life.
Of analyzing like pop culture and stuff like that. Yeah. Whereas like he sees a piece of like a game or a show or something and he can just think about
it. It's like an onion. Like he peels back all the layers. Like, oh, yeah. Okay, the gameplay is really good. Let's go into the history of the studio and the people that made it and all this and like the social implications.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, this game's fun.
Well, no, while he is peeling back the onion a million times and making a million pieces of content about it, mine is just like, hey, there's an onion.
Exactly.
That's pretty much it.
I love you so much.
Me?
Yes, I do.
Oh, thank you.
I just want you to know. I don't want you to feel bad.
Know
that I do love you.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Despite this onion business.
Okay. I was worried the onion business would be our undoing. So, at one point here, Hansan had told Nachan, because remember, Nachan is into Hansan even though he has a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, hey, let's go fishing. And initially, he's like, yeah, okay, cool. And then he thought about it, and he's like, I did just buy a fishing rod and a reel and all this stuff for my girlfriend. Right. That's not going
to
be cool.
Right, because he hasn't even had the chance to go with his girlfriend fishing yet. So.
Exactly.
I really appreciate how considerate he is of her.
Totally. And he goes and just tells her, and he's like, hey, I'm sorry about this. I know I said I'd do this, but I hope you get it.
And she responds like a totally reasonable person. And starts crying.
It's crazy. Like, she goes from like smiling and looking mm-hmm. at him to like she blinks and then two teardrops like simultaneously fall out. It was like the most like crazy like cartoon crying I'd ever seen.
It was a weird time to cry. I feel like crying is a weird reaction to that. Even if you really like a guy, I mean, chill out.
I feel like she just hadn't really opened up at any real point emotionally on the show. She's always just been kind of like blunt and service level, and so she hadn't really like opened herself up at all, and so like by doing that, by putting herself out there, that was the first time she'd really tried that, and then she got shut down, and so I think she was kind of like, fuck,
man. Yeah, but just wait till he's out of the room. Imagine that this is a similar situation where you have to tell a girl like, oh, I'm sorry, I actually can't do this, and she just starts crying.
Yeah.
Would you think that's a that normal happen. Reaction? Well, that was... moving on.
Yeah, I don't know. I doubt she meant to do it. It wasn't like a planned thing or like, hey, I'm going to cry
I know,
now.
Her emotions just got the better of her. I shouldn't be so harsh on her, but God damn it. That's why we watch the show, to judge people.
Oh. So at one point, oh, you put this file this under Hikaru, just not being cool about talking about this Misaki stuff. But they're all sitting around talking, and I think Michan's there, and she says something like, oh, yeah, you're going to the hot springs. You're going to this co-ed bath with this girl. Like, you know, would you do that with someone that you – she says, like, would you do that with someone you liked or something? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, did I say I liked her? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay, man. Like, she was, like, right there. It's like he's –
he's a young boy who doesn't know any better.
It seems like he kind of thinks he's hot shit, too.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's just being kind of cold, like unnecessarily cold. Like, if he's not into her, just be like, hey, sorry, I'm not into you. He is not – he's just kind of stringing her along here, and it kind of sucks to see. So at the end of this one, Arisa's on the way out. She gets a scrapbook. And there was a part here that really made me laugh where Armand wrote a note in English in the scrapbook. And she's like, you know, I don't know how to read English. Please read this for me. Uh-huh. And then he reads it in English, which I thought was very funny.
So nice to occasionally hear English in the show.
It was weird. Yeah, rewound it. And I was like, oh, wow, crazy. So moving on to episode 29 here, we meet the new girl. She's referred to as Riko-chan and Riko-pen at different times. We'll go with Riko-pen. She's 18, and she is – it's weird. The subtitle said she was in her third year of high school, but then a different thing said she was in her fourth year of high school. Either way, she's 18, and she just won some, like, national beauty pageant thing. And she comes in – not a lot of story here. We see kind of, like, her vignette, like, her intro vignette that she's with her mom, and her mom's asking about boys and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But she's very, very young.
Seems very sheltered.
Yeah. So we don't get a whole lot of sense of her in these episodes here. But here's another thing where Misaki is, again, she's bumping up against all this stuff with Hikaru, and he's just not giving it up at all. He's not just letting her know in any direction, whether he's into it or not. Mm. And actually, it's probably leaning more towards not.
Right.
And so Misaki decides that she needs to try on more feminine clothes to kind of, like, get his attention or whatever. So she goes shopping. She buys this, like, loungewear stuff. Mm. And it's kind of this weird thing where she does come down and, like, make a show of it and stuff. And she's sitting down and he does call it out. He's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? And she's just like, I got these new clothes. What do you think of this loungewear? And he's just like, whatever. Like, he even says something at one point about, like, yeah, I'm just surprised because usually you dress lamely. It's like, oh, okay. But needless to say, it didn't really work the way I think Hikaru expected.
And
or
also,
Misaki.
Let's say it did work and he goes from being lukewarm about her to being absolutely crazy about her. Why would you want to date a guy who only suddenly likes you because he realizes how hot you can be?
That's the thing. But also, I wonder if maybe she's shallow in a way because, again, it changes by the end. But she does say at the beginning that the thing that attracted her to him was just like, oh, it's his face.
And honestly, Dan, there's nothing else there that I could – like, what else does he have to offer? He doesn't seem to be particularly funny. He has a temper. He's, you know, dumb. I mean, he's – I'm not a huge Hikaru fan. But
I'm
then again,
either.
I'm not a huge Misaki supporter either.
Yeah, I kind of just feel bad for Misaki.
I feel bad for her, too. She seems misguided.
And she's kind of barking up this wrong tree, and she keeps doubling down on it. And I think every step of the way, there are signs that maybe you should let this one go.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times it's best to not put yourself out there so much. I mean, it's been a while since we both dated.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if you are interested in someone and you're not sure if they're interested in you, maybe – back off a little bit and see if they will, you know, then because then if they at their own volition come to you, then that demonstrates that they have some interest. Whereas if you keep inundating them with stuff and, you know, coming on to them and this and that, like, I feel like that's kind of like, well, you know.
And at what point does that just come across as desperate? And it's just like, okay, I haven't really been showing any interest and you're just going, you're doubling down and doubling down and doubling down on this. So. But yeah, that situation with the loungewear leads to this weird conversation over dinner where it's unclear. Like, I didn't know if Nichan had known about the loungewear thing. She must have, because I can't imagine it just came up out of the blue.
Well, didn't she go shopping with her to get the loungewear?
Oh, was it her? I do remember she went with one of the girls to go get shopping.
Yeah.
I didn't have it in my notes. I couldn't remember if it was Riko-pen or Nichan. It was probably Nichan.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. So that does explain a bit why she was so pissed, why Misaki was so pissed. Because at dinner with the whole group, Nichan is saying some stuff about like, oh yeah, if you're gonna do the loungewear thing, it just has to be a natural thing. You can't force it. You can't just show up and mm-hmm. expect that mm-hmm. that's gonna work or whatever. And then at a couple points, Misaki's like, can we stop talking about this? Right. Like, this is like clearly uncomfortable. And like awkward. Everyone's kind of
you have to remember everyone was at the table at this point.
And so she was probably already embarrassed because this thing didn't work. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I don't want to keep talking about it while everyone's here, including the guy I was trying to impress. Mm-hmm. And Nichan brings it up, and like there are some real death stares going on from Misaki right. here, which again, I just feel bad for Misaki here. Also, at some point in this episode, Armand asks Rikopin to go to the ocean, so that's kind of a question mark. Maybe Armand and Rikopin will become a thing, mm-hmm. Remains to be seen. But then the last episode from this set here, Misaki again puts herself out there with Hikaru, and she goes to the bedroom, the boys' bedroom, and says like, hey, do you want to go out on the 10th? You know, doesn't really give any real details or anything. Find out later. The plan is we're going to go to this really fancy Italian restaurant. We're going to see the city lights and everything. And then before they go on the date, Nichan does go to Hansan and say like, hey, did I fuck up here basically? And Hansan's like, yeah, you shouldn't have brought that up. You need mm-hmm. to think about how your words affect other people. Right. And to her credit, Nichan does kind of like, she's like, oh man, yeah, maybe that was mm-hmm. shitty. And she just straight up apologizes and mm-hmm. seems to be handled pretty well there. But yeah, Misaki and Hikaru have the date. Episode kind of ends on a bit of a cliffhanger with Hikaru putting herself out there again. Or I'm sorry, Misaki. They're both introduced around the same time. And yeah, it's like the names, it's like three syllables. I got them mixed up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But yes, Hikaru gets basically told that she likes him. And we don't know exactly what's going on leading into the next one.
What is to come? Who can say?
Yeah, so I would say not the most, I don't want to say exciting, but not the most eventful.
Exactly. A lot of new people. So it's a lot of like beginnings of storylines, but nothing really has happened yet. So.
Yeah. And at this point, like Armand is kind of one of the like, I think he's the biggest like veteran of the house at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember him being pretty new coming into part two. But I think it might be time for some Terrace House Power Rankings.
Terrace House Power Rankings.
All right, so we are going to allow Arisa and Rikopin to both be on here since they're both in at least a couple episodes of this set here. Mm-hmm. So we will have seven folks in the rankings here. So let's start with number seven here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that we have the same.
Rika?
I put Hikaru.
I just put Riko because she didn't really do anything. And okay. Nothing against her, but like I just feel like I can't really say one way or another. So it's she's an honorary part of the rankings this week, but I wouldn't call her to me, she's not an official part until she does something crazy.
That's fair. I put her more in the middle of the pack because, again, it's kind of a neutral thing. So I don't have any negative feelings, which that's I do have true. Negative feelings for Hikaru.
Maybe I should put her in smack dab in the middle.
Okay.
Too.
All right. So a retroactive change around.
Okay.
So let's say. Okay, who's your last place? Who's your seventh?
Hikaru.
Then? Okay, that's mine too.
Yeah.
Okay, and just, yeah, being a dick, making Misaki feel
bad.
Has
temper, yeah.
Yeah, just, I'm not really liking anything I'm seeing from that dude right now. Which brings us to number six. I was not big on Nichan in this. She was, the loungewear thing was weird. The actively, almost proudly going after somebody that's in a relationship. Yeah. I was kind of, like, there's been some question marks with her about whether that's just the way she talks, whether she's blunt, or if she's actively being shitty.
Yeah, no, that's extremely inconsiderate. I mean, just if someone's in a relationship, just lay off.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you were in that situation, if she was Hansan's girlfriend?
And, yeah, and watching the show and be like, man, what the fuck?
Yeah, right. That's totally right. And I forgot that. They're watching the show.
Yeah, and do you remember that the girlfriend even said that she wouldn't help with the hat thing for Arisa?
Right.
Because she was like, I refuse to work on that.
Right.
You know, so like obviously she's watching the show
right.
and has some, you know, like, yeah, that's incredibly inconsiderate. Okay, so we've both gotten a Chan at number six. Mm-hmm. And so that puts me at number five. I've got Rikopin for the reasons we talked about, where it's just like I feel like it's kind of a blank slate at this point. She hasn't really been involved in any real storylines or drama or anything.
Right.
We haven't seen enough of her personality.
And that's where I'll slide her in as well.
Okay.
Why not?
So far we've got the exact same bottom three here, which will bring us on to number four. I've got Armand here.
I put Misaki.
Okay. Fair.
She's sweet but seems misguided.
I agree.
You know, I wish she would have the self-respect to just realize it's not really going to work and, you know, move on. She's a very pretty girl. I'm sure she could find a suitable bachelor for herself and, you know, not get so hung up on this douchebag.
Yeah, I question a lot of her logic, but I do think at least all of her stuff comes from a positive place. So overall, I do like her. I feel bad for her. So I had her at number three. I had Armand at number four, just kind of right in the middle here. He didn't really have a whole lot going on in this episode. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've always liked him. I thought his thing with reading the English was really funny. So overall, positive on Armand, but not really a big set of episodes for him.
Right. I put Arissa there because she worked really hard, but like I said, she's just not really on the show.
Yeah, not really a big factor in things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my number three was Misaki. Who was your number three?
Armand,
okay.
Yeah. Hard worker. Sad to see him lonely without any love interest. Mm-hmm. Seems to be, you know, entertaining the prospect of starting something with Riko-chan.
Yep. We'll see where that goes.
We will see.
Okay, so from the bottom up, mine is Hikaru, Nachan, Riko-pen, Armand, Misaki. What was yours again?
Hikaru, Nachan, Riko, Misaki, Arissa.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that'll bring us to our number two, which I had Arissa here. Maybe that's high for the reasons we talked about with her being kind of a non-factor in a lot of ways. But again, everything I've seen from her was positive. I appreciated the way she dealt with the Armand stuff with just being, you know, very, she didn't lead him on at all. She told him what the deal was. She told him in a way that wasn't shitty in any way. She seems to be a really hard worker. I respect that, especially so after thinking of that savvy move she might have done. So yeah, I've got her at number two. I like her. Okay, so what's your number two?
I'm not sure because I shifted everything around after we decided that Riko, you know, deserves to be in neutral ground and mm-hmm. not, you know, relegated to the seventh spot. And my list got all jostled now.
It's jostled?
It's jostled. So I could read you what I have, but it doesn't seem right based on what I've said.
What would you guess your number two is?
I have it as Armand, but I already talked about Armand.
That's fair. We can say Armand's your number two.
Okay.
For reasons discussed.
Okay.
All right. Which leaves us with number one. And I've got Hansan here.
Well, obviously I have that too.
Okay, yes.
I can say that with confidence.
Yes. He is great. I think the only thing that could potentially get weird is if, like, I don't know, I'd be kind of disappointed if he kind of falls along with this Nachan stuff, like her weird, like, manipulating, trying to, like, break up his relationship. Because, like, he did go out for drinks with her afterwards, and, like, some of the panelists and stuff were like, this is kind of weird. That's basically, like, they're openly saying, like, this is how cheating starts. This is how this starts. They're going to start getting close to each other, and they're going to... So I don't want to see that happen.
I agree. But I also think that, you know, you do live with these people. I think it's just, at a certain point, I feel like it would be normal to go out with a housemate, even if it's of the opposite sex, you know what I mean? I think that he's seen some bad sides of her, you know, her overreacting to things, her saying things that are not appropriate and upset people, you know, her coming on strong. And, you know, I would be surprised if he's actually seriously interested in her.
Yeah, that's my question is, like, I totally agree with you on, like, hey, you're living with these people, you're going to go out, you know, even if it's opposite sex or whatever. But, like, I just worry that Nachan might be kind of manipulative. Like, she has kind of shown that. Like, we've had question marks about her from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I just have to wonder if these are just, like, friendly things. I'm sure Hansan sees them as friendly things, but I wonder if Nachan is just, like, actively manipulating and trying to weasel her way in.
And I wonder if it's in the back of their minds at all that they will be watching themselves at some point. Like, won't Hansan see all the stuff that Riko has said about all the stuff that Nachan has said about, you know, his girlfriend and her feelings for him? And
yeah, like, he'll probably see that while they're still in the house.
Yeah,
like, we've seen them watching recent episodes together. So
it's very odd.
Yeah, so
odd choices.
Hansan, I think, at least in this set of episodes, he seems to be, like, an all-timer on Boys and Girls in the City as far as, like, just one of the best people in the house so far. So we will see what happens at some point here. We will get back. But if you missed the kind of PSA, the programming note earlier, we're not going to always or ever say what the next week's episode is on the podcast itself for Painting the Stream, because we want to have some flexibility in case, like, oh shit, this thing just popped up that we hadn't heard about before. So check. That's an extra reason to follow at PandaStream on Twitter, because we will always
As if you needed any more reasons.
Yes, it is. Programming updates will come from PandaStream if you want to watch ahead. So yeah, that's how you get a hold of us on Twitter. If you want to email us, that is at panningthestream@gmail.com. You can review us on iTunes. That is always very much appreciated.
Oh, that would be swell.
That'd be great. And also would be swell if you join our little listener support feature, which...
Well, that would be mighty swell.
Yes, a huge thank you to everyone who is currently supporting Panning the Stream. If you would like to do that, you can help us out at $1, $5, or $10 a month, or just a one-time thing, and then you can cancel. If you go to panningthestream.com and click support this podcast, that will go directly to us, help keep the lights on, all the time we put into this episode, or into this podcast for you. We're not going to act like we have to have that to survive as human beings, but it's definitely a real nice way to show that you appreciate the time we put into this thing.
Yeah.
And it will definitely ensure that we continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bonk here, weeks ago, began making haikus for each person that is a supporter of Painting the Stream. Mm-hmm. And I believe we have one this week.
Indeed. Dan, this one goes out to a contributor named Wesley.
Hello, Wesley.
Hello, Wesley. Thank you for your contribution, your continued support, your listening. I just want to say thank you because you're great. And my way of doing this is to recite for you and for everyone at home a haiku that I wrote for you personally, Wesley. So I hope you enjoy.
Enjoy this, Wesley.
This one goes out to Wesley, who has given us the gift of friendship.
Aw.
It works. It works.
Oh, okay. All right. Don't have to count every time. All right. Thank you so much, Wesley. And thanks to everyone that helps out with the listener support feature. That's it. I have to stop myself from saying what's next week. Because...
Wait, don't we want to talk about things that we recommend?
Oh, God, yeah. We have suggestions.
Oh,
shit.
God, yeah.
I forgot to write mine down. I had one.
Fuck yeah. Well, do you want to think about one while I say mine?
You say stuff, and I'll think about stuff. Okay. I had something.
All right. My recommendation this week is for a 1988 movie by David Cronenberg called Dead Ringers. It's a very strange movie. It's kind of like a psychological thriller horror movie. It's about these two identical twin gynecologists and how they use their, you know, very, like, identical appearances to kind of take advantage of women, and it ends up, they unravel in a really crazy, awesome way. I highly recommend it. It's very dark, very odd.
This was late 80s?
Late 80s. Jeremy Irons is in it.
Oh,
so,
cool.
You know,
he's great.
Yeah, he's an incredible actor, and yeah, highly recommend it.
Okay. I forgot the thing I was going to say, but I thought of a new one while I was home over the holidays. Mm. My father showed me a documentary he was very excited to show me. It's on Showtime. It's called Lynyrd Skynyrd, If I Leave Here Tomorrow, and it covers the original band, the only Lynyrd Skynyrd that matters. Basically, everything up to the plane crash. It actually goes pretty in-depth into the plane crash itself and everything.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it's a whole lot of, you know, it's a music documentary. It shows how these guys got together when they were teenagers, and, you know, it's a really interesting story of a bunch of very interesting personalities in Skynyrd, and it would be especially eye-opening to people who just kind of chalk them up to Sweet Home Alabama and Freebird. They really had a great assortment of music, and I found it very, very fascinating. Good look at maybe my favorite band.
Never charter a small aircraft.
No.
It always seems to end in disaster.
Especially if you're a musician. That'll be it for this episode of Panning the Stream, and keep an eye on at Panning the Stream on Twitter to find out what to watch next week, because we will return. Thank you, Bunk.
Bye. Oh, thank you. I love you. Bye, everyone.